Welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, but most of all, good morning to you, Charles in New York.
Thanks for having me on, Gar.
We're further apart than we ever been, I think, Charles, because right now I'm in Tromsø, the capital of northern Norway, the biggest town, of course, biggest city in northern Norway. Located on an island, 20-minute bike ride or car ride from hunting, skiing, hiking, doing whatever you want, or, of course, fishing, because this is also the capital of the Norwegian fisheries in the Arctic Sea. The Arctic Sea is directly opposite of where I'm standing now. You can't see it from here. Luckily, the people here are not connected to Europe. I think they're happy for that. They have more than enough problems connecting to the Southerners like me. They're a lovely bunch of people. But to get to the point, they don't pay as much for electricity as we do in the South. And I thought we should talk a little bit about energy today. And let's rewind till Monday. I think Mr. Biden held a speech to the UN General Assembly. I didn't watch it, but you did.
Yeah, I'm ashamed, frankly, of Joe Biden and his handlers. It is obvious that the man is not competent. He's not mentally all there. His speech was angry, petulant, incorrect, and we're rushing headlong into a situation where it would appear, in particular, the United States and the UK want to instigate not simply a military response to the Russian special military operation in Ukraine, but now what they are gearing everybody up to do is to have regime change in Russia, eliminating Putin and his team. Now, regime change has not worked very well for the United States and our allies in virtually any theater that we care to think about, save perhaps in Kuwait. But that was, 31 years ago in Kuwait. It hasn't worked in Iraq. It's not going to work in Iran. It certainly didn't work in Afghanistan. And it's not as if Russia is going to say, oh, sure, why don't you topple Russia? So where I really have a problem with Biden's speech is he picked the trail of analysis up in 2014 with the invasion of Crimea and refused to acknowledge that there were any provocations prior to then by, in particular, the United States, Bill Clinton, starting in 1993, where we went back on our word to the former Soviet Union, to Yeltsin and others, that NATO would not aggressively push to the east. And instead, that's exactly what we've done, in particularly under the Obama administration, which instigated by its aggressive actions the invasion of Crimea. So it was for show. No serious person takes his analysis with any credibility. And now, sadly, as it gets colder and colder in Europe, many nations in Europe don't have the energy that you guys do, and they don't have an alternative now. And the United States is basically asking our European allies to jump off a cliff. And I just don't see how the foreign policy establishment would think this is a good idea in September of 2022.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read that purportedly RAND document. The RAND Corporation published a document about how they could get the U.S. back in the driver's seat by exacerbating the crisis then brewing in Europe. Did you have a chance to look at it, and do you think it's real?
I just think it's completely misplaced. When people in the United States get on the world stage and they start talking about America's interest in this region, in that region, and another region, I walk out my front door here in Manhattan, which in theory is a very rich city and a very rich neighborhood within the city. And last evening, there was a yelling bum sprawled out in front of the adjacent townhouse. No police, no nothing. There are potholes, there's garbage, there's crime inside our country. We're not in a position at this moment as America to embark on all these adventures around the world. And I, in my business career, spent a fair amount of time investing in energy projects. I understand these are long horizon projects. You can't decide today that you're going to get a pipeline built tomorrow or even in the next 5 or 10 years. And for good reason, because it's dangerous to transport this stuff and you want to have regulators take a close look at all the aspects of the energy situation. This rush away from nuclear into renewables that are not reliable, that are very expensive, that basically can't hope to provide the amount of energy required in places like Germany and cold climates across Europe. This is not an academic exercise. People are going to die. Old people in particular are going to die because these Greens are using political power they really shouldn't have to force politicians and national leaders to go down a course that will not work. Thank God for Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan, the CEO, who yesterday faced down the squad in Congress and basically said this project to do what we're doing in Europe is a project that leads America straight to hell. And I don't want to see you or our European friends in hell when we could be in a very different place. I think Europe's bureaucracy needs to be dismantled. The European Union, I think that individual nation states like Norway, who have a lot of wealth and a small population, need to guide their futures themselves, looking after the true interests of the Norwegian people. The Norwegian outlook is very different than Greece or Italy or Spain or Portugal. And, you know, forcing people to pretend that this mess is actually working is a very big and costly mistake, which could not only lead to economic problems, but could lead to even World War III, the way we're going.
Wow, Charles, you came up with a lot of information here, and I really don't know where to start, except the fact that I'm standing in Norway, and we've been self-sufficient. We've been self-sufficient with hydroelectric power since more than 100 years ago, thanks to our politicians, and they're meddling with the Paris Treaty and their so-called green change. We're sending a lot of our hydroelectric power to Europe, which made the prices go up like hell. And of course, it's a big crisis. I mean, we have had interest rates as well. Prices have gone up more than 33% since the start of the year. And there are a lot of people getting laid off because companies cannot afford, in the South that is, cannot afford paying their electricity bills. And of course, that would be a problem for ordinary households too. Then we have our prime minister, who's also been visiting New York this week. And yesterday, Thursday, that is, he was elected into a partnership called the Global Alliance for People and Planet. Have you had a look at that?
I have. It's another PR exercise. I'm sure maybe a firm like McKinsey was involved designing a slide deck to make it seem interesting. But the last thing we need is another global partnership to do anything. What we need to do globally is pay down debt and slim the size dramatically of ineffective government bureaucracies at national, regional, and global level. That's what we need to do. This trip down nightmare lane, not memory lane, nightmare lane, where we created the EU and we allowed inside the United States and the bigger countries' governments to just balloon to a size that makes no sense. We haven't done a fair reckoning of what happened to all that money. Breaking in the last several minutes or so, there's a suspicion now that the COVID relief exercise in the United States is the largest fraud in history, that a lot of money, $5 trillion, went towards that. And reports are coming in now that hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, are going missing. These great plans that Biden committed us, America, to again in a meeting where he walked off the stage at the end of his speech and didn't know where he was, There's been no auditing of the Global Fund, no auditing of these pipe dream projects. And so the last thing we should be doing, or Norway should be doing, is getting involved in yet another one. I mean, I'm sure it's fun when you're the prime minister or government official to come to New York, not have to pay any local taxes, enjoy what remains of these hotels and restaurants, and give lofty speeches that really nobody listens to, and have a fawning press write great articles about the contributions that Norway is making. The reality is the Norwegian people are poorer. The American people are poorer. And we need to have a reckoning here where people come to their senses and understand bigger is not better when it comes to bureaucracies. These bureaucracies, there are too many of them, and they're stealing money from taxpayers to go to cronies, and they are ultimately going to harm and lead to the bankruptcy of certain nations, in my view.
And it plays right into the playbook of World Economic Forum. And Mr. Prime Minister, or our Prime Minister, Jonas Gahr Støre, was elected co-chair of this global partnership for global alliance for people and climate, together with Mr. Rajiv Shah from the Rockefeller Foundation. And we had a lot of, most of the people on that board are straight out of World Economic Forum, including the former Norwegian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Børge Brende, who's now a president and allegedly the right-hand man of Klaus Schwab.
Right. I think that should be named the World Evil Forum. I mean, it is. There's a great guy called Ted Malik, Malloch, who was the executive director at the World Economic Forum and had a revelation that it was very bad and not a force for good. So he wrote a book about it, and I commend that book. I know I haven't skied there many times, but I do like Davos, and I happen to know that the local people don't like the idea of the World Economic Forum in there. It messes the whole place up. And who elected Klaus Schwab? God, who is this guy? What are his academic credentials? What's really going on at what seems to be a larger version of the Clinton Grifter Initiative there in Switzerland? Why do we need this? What independent firm has ever gone in and established that the various initiatives they say they're going to pursue actually work for the benefit of the people in question? I see this as an excuse to have a fancy meal in a nice location paid for by your employer and doing a lot of damage. In a world where we have so many more tools, why do we want an actual tool, Klaus Schwab, dictating what 7.5 billion people in the world do? Nobody is that smart.
Well, I think the name you gave him, World Evil Forum, is a very, very apt naming of it. The sadness or the tragedy is that our politicians, including the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister, and most politicians in the Norwegian Parliament, are applauding this. We spoke about energy. Norway has, as I said, been self-sufficient with hydroelectric power for more than 100 years, thanks to the cables connecting us to Great Britain and the continent. Our energy prices are soaring. Now, our politicians, in line with the Paris Treaty, want to do the great green reset. So now they're advocating. Wind farms at sea. And they're going to pour billions of subsidies into it. And of course, as has been pointed out, no one knows how much it will cost. Then it is totally unnecessary, because that energy from the wind farms will eventually go to Europe, not to Norway. But it is the Norwegian taxpayers who will be paying for it. And it will lead to layoffs and a lot of problems for the Norwegian industry. Maybe they will make some money on exporting this technology to other stupid people bound up with the green reset, but it is a disaster. Then, yesterday, you mentioned nuclear power a while ago. Norway never had any nuclear power. Okay, we had two test reactors, but they're closing down. Now, a Norwegian billionaire in crowns yesterday announced that he wants to start nuclear power, probably with small modular reactors in Norway. immediately, Minister of Oil and Energy came out and said, no, wait, we cannot have a nuclear energy in Norway. Why not? I mean, nuclear technology has gone a little far away from Three Mile Island. So, we're in contact with academics who are in no doubt that nuclear power, maybe including thorium, which Norway has a lot of, is the future energy source of the world.
Yeah. I mean, to me, and again, I haven't spent that much time in Norway, but if I were a Norwegian politician, I would say, you know, enough of this going to Switzerland, enough of this going to New York, enough of our sending money to this bureaucracy so management fees can come out of that, they make grants to other not-for-profits and management fees come out of that. Why don't we have an annual conference maybe in the summer before your vacation season, maybe in May, where you showcase Norway's various development projects around the world, and you have people from those countries come up to Norway with your politicians and State Department people explaining what you've done, what you've accomplished, but you do it in Norway. This idea of being one of 200 countries at the UN or 183, Norway should chart its own course and show the world how to do development projects properly if that's what you want to do.
As a matter of fact, our prime minister now wants to export our green reset ideology to Africa, as if windmills and solar farms will do any big thing for Africa. It is, as one commentator said, it's just a way of ripping off Africa one more time. They will have thousands of highly paid consultants go down there and rip off the natural resources.
Yeah, it's distressing. And I've seen articles now, finally, the African politicians are waking up and saying, look, we don't want this foreign aid anymore. What we want is we want to create multinational businesses that can compete on the world stage from African headquarters. We don't want handouts. We want profits. And I think, you know, now, so many years after we've been down a track of trying to foist these crazy development projects that don't seem to work on Africa and only lead to more debt, we need to radically change course there. And sadly, we don't seem to be learning from our mistakes.
I've visited Africa. I lived in Africa, worked in Africa. I'm sure that if they had reliable energy sources and got rid of the blackouts and also made factories there refining and working on the natural resources they have, my God, South Sudan, for instance, which is a nightmare, definitely they could probably feed all of Africa if they had the infrastructure.
Right. Yeah, it's a sad tale. In college, I went down to Africa, to Egypt for the first time in 1975. I spent a fair amount of time in East and West Africa. Business, of course, never trying to do anything down in Africa. I bet you if I went down back to Ghana, to Kenya, Ivory Coast, and visited it now in 2022 or next year in 2023, I would find it's probably the same or worse than it used to be, only with a lot more people. And that frankly is deplorable for all the money that's been spent to be in that place today, to have it's just reprehensible.
It is reprehensible. And I worked with UNICEF back in 2012 and 13, ostensibly to remedy malnutrition in Nigeria. I still have a Google alert reminding me weekly that nothing has changed, nothing has improved. Malnutrition is a big problem, especially in the Sahel states. And so what they need is definitely not green energy or wind farms. Of course, a wind farm might be of some help somewhere, but when it comes in the package packed by the people in Davos, I wouldn't trust it. I wouldn't touch it with a pole.
Yeah, I agree. But as my professors used to say in business school, these people are great talking about long-term plans. They now have short-term priorities to think about, like, how are you going to get your apartment or house heated on this weekend? I mean, and on next weekend. And how are you going to pay that heating bill? How are you going to feed your family? How are you going to save for retirement? Are your children going to have reasonable jobs coming out of these high-cost countries? And I think the answer to all those questions is no, unless you're part of the World Evil Forum and the cliques that support it, where you get cushy jobs because you're related to the various players. So this has been a disastrous experiment. We need to change course radically. And I see encouraging signs that different countries in Europe are increasingly saying enough of this, excuse my language, crap. We are not going to do this. There's signs out of Italy that maybe they're not going to go along, and other countries across Europe. In the United States, we've got a pivotal election coming up in 6-7 weeks. We'll see what happens here. But there's never been in my lifetime a more perilous moment that I remember. I was very young in 1962 during the missile crisis, so I don't really remember that. But to me, it seems like we're staring down what could be a nuclear exchange all kinds of very scary possibilities involving maybe biological weapons or civil war or whatever. And these idiots at the World Evil Forum and elsewhere are talking about plans that may or may not bear fruit if they do in 10 years. It's lunacy.
It is lunacy, but I think we ought to grab on, or at least I'm grabbing on to what you see as encouraging signs in Europe. And not that it has manifested it that much, but I sense a growing anger in Norway, brought on by the energy crisis that our politicians dragged us into. If people wake up from the MSM litany, people can do a lot of change, but they have to get together, and they have to do something at the election booths. And first try will be in Italy, and then you have the midterm elections in the U.S. There's a lot of hearsay around that. I'm saying that the Democrats have said that they've stopped the red tide. I really don't know what the situation is. You're better to assess that.
Tirsdag til uka skal vi ha vårt første lesemøte i høst. Det er den britisk-svenske filmfotografen Pelle Taylor som skal vise sin dokumentarfilm om Sør-Afrika. Den har dokument delvis finansiert, så det er vi stolt av å kunne være med og vise denne for dere. Så vi håper dere kommer. Benytter sjansen. Husk at Sør-Afrika hørte vi veldig mye om for noen år siden, da Tom Christiansen fløy høyt, og Mandela og alt var, da var det inn å være snakk om Sør-Afrika, men nå hører vi ikke så mye om det lenger, og gjett hvorfor. Og det kan jo også være et poeng at Vesteuropa og USA begynner å minne mer og mer om Sør-Afrika. Så vi håper at du kommer, og vi får en fin kveld sammen, fordi det trenger vi. Og da tenker jeg ikke bare på Sør-Afrika, jeg tenker på det fellesskapet som dokument er. Så velkommen.
That is rubbish. I mean, basically the big dynamic here that the mainstream and the established parties don't want to understand is that people who used to be Republican or used to be Democrat are leaving and becoming independent. And they may pick social issues that are progressive and combine them with economic issues that are conservative and vote independently on those issues. So the biggest thing to wonder about in the surveys is what percentage allocation should you talk to? The next thing is with Biden demonizing all so-called ultra-MAGA Republicans, you're not going to find those types of people answering surveys. So their opinions are going to be undercounted. We see in places like Oregon and Minnesota, which are hard left states, that in Oregon, the Republican candidate for governor is actually looking like that person might win. Statewide offices in Minnesota might well go towards Republicans, which is a huge eye opener. Here in New York, Lee Zeldin running for governor and the attorney general candidate, are Republicans, are both looking as if they have a shot at winning 6-7 weeks out. And with all this mayhem in the markets, scare about inflation, loss of jobs, all of that doesn't bode well for the party in power. So I think this is people trying to protect their own positions and have relevance. They speak the way they speak on mainstream media. I think they will be proven wrong again, perhaps on the scale of what happened in 1980 when everybody said Carter was a shoo-in and Reagan won a landslide. So let's wait and see.
Let's wait and see. Speaking about former presidents, I got a YouTube video from Redacted. They were talking about the Clinton Initiative. I'm going to add that to, or I'm going to leave that in the story accompanying this program. But have you had any chance to look at, dissect Clinton and his meeting with the good friend of our Prime Minister, Mr. Fink of BlackRock?
Yeah. Well, so to your viewers, it's important to understand that the Clinton Global Initiative has never been at any time a legitimate charity. In 2005, when they held their first meeting, the parent company, the Clinton Foundation, had no articles of incorporation and no bylaws, meaning that it was not actually a charitable organization. It did not have the authority to hold the meeting that it held then or in any subsequent year through 2016. And they've never fixed any of the required paperwork for this latest meeting. The people who went were actually, in the main, pretty low-level people, surprisingly low-level. I mean, when you have to trot out, you know, the leading national leaders are the leader of Moldova and the leader of Barbados. I mean, you've gone pretty far down the pecking order from 2009 when you had Obama and pretty big people at that meeting. And then, you know, the garbage that comes out of their accomplishments, it's really, in my world of charity, first of all, you don't brag about what you've given. But beyond that, you don't even call it an accomplishment until somebody's parted with cash. All they're talking about are so-called commitments to action, which is not even a firm pledge. It's like, I might get around to doing this if the spirit moves me. Oh, okay, let's give this guy credit for that. So it was really embarrassing, and it will be proven, I think, in time to be really embarrassing going forward.
Then that embarrassment might hit our politicians. I think that will do it for today, Charles. I wish you a great weekend. We'll, of
Thank
course,
you.
Post your YouTube show address. And people out there, whether it's night, morning, or late evening, please don't forget to support us. I think we're a better bet than the Clinton Initiative and also the Global Alliance for People and Planet. And we have a PayPal, so you can support us from wherever you watch this program, wherever in the world you watch this program. Charles, great to have you here. Look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, Guy.
Nej men, hej! Har du också antistatliga hållningar? Ja, da har du kommet til rett sted. Da Dokk-TV noe for deg. Men for at vi skal kunne lage Dokk-TV, så vi avhengig av din støtte. Vips et bidrag til 63 89 41. Takk.